Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Free Agent Podcast. Today, I'm lucky enough to have Kieran Scali-Carde. Thanks so much for joining, Kieran.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, so this is a super interesting topic to me. And I would say you're the foremost expert in the contingent workforce industry with 25 years in the industry, working at some household brands like Accenture, Goldman Sachs, Citigroup, running the PMO. And each of those companies have workforces in excess of 120,000 people globally, which is insane. So I would imagine you've seen it all. You've helped correct inefficiencies, overcomplications. You even have your own podcast as well, where you help 6,000 plus HR procurement leaders with clarity, strategy, and savings as it pertains to their workforce programs. And the name of the podcast is The Contingent Compass. We'll be sure to add a lead to it. Thanks again for joining.
My pleasure. I'm looking forward to the conversation.
Yeah, likewise. So let's just go ahead and jump into things here. I think that the easiest question is to kind of set a baseline. What does contingent labor mean to you? And how are companies generally leveraging contingent workforces today?
So, good question. And I think, in this space, there's a lot of jargon, there's a lot of terms and, acronyms. But in it, if you boil it all down, in its simplest form, contingent labor is really the individuals that come into an organization to perform a task or perform an assignment or a role, but they are the employee of a third party. So they're external to the client and they're coming in typically to perform an assignment. You can have different types, you can have staff augmentation. So those are really, think about temporary labor or temp gigs. And then you have what's called SOW or services procurement, and those are typically project-based, longer term. So essentially, contingent labor is just a fancy term for external employees who are the employee of a different company than yours.
Got it. So they're on a contract, generally maybe a 1099 or a W-2 through that third party, but they're not a full-time employee of that organization itself.
Correct. And typically, organizations leverage contingent labor to augment, think about peaks in, say, retailers or food manufacturer. It's typically to augment. It's a flexible workforce, essentially.
Yeah, and I see it as added horsepower, much to kind of the point you're making. And the great part is that companies can kind of add, they can also detract or take away when they need
Correct.
to. And I think that's kind of a good segue into my first question for you. So all companies, it appears, are trying to do more with less right now. And they're cutting costs, and a lot of those costs could be through the contingent labor environment, maybe getting rid of full-time employees for more contingent labor. But they're all cutting costs right now. What does that look like in today's environment? What are some trends that you're seeing?
So I think, doing more with less isn't, or it shouldn't be about squeezing harder. It should be about spending in smarter ways. And in this space, in contingent labor, that means getting real visibility into where your dollars are actually going. So ditching vanity metrics and building a program that runs lean without actually running blind. And to be honest, the most efficient programs that I see, they aren't cutting, they're actually calibrating. They know which roles deliver ROI, which suppliers perform, and which processes drag down speed and quality. For me, it's not just about doing more with less people, it's about doing more with less waste.
Got it. So it's all around the visibility and the metrics as it pertains to the people, not just blindly hiring to your point, which I'm sure a lot of companies are doing that. We just need more people. It's like, what are the people
Correct.
actually doing?
And there's just an add-on to that. There's a lot of noise right now about AI, and I know we'll maybe touch on that a little bit later, but there's a lot of people who are afraid of AI. But if you think about the comment I made, it's about doing more with less waste. AI just helps to reduce that waste. So it's, for me, AI is nothing to be afraid of. Yes, the landscape might look a little different, but for me, the AI piece is just about cutting out waste.
Understood. And how have you seen kind of the environment change in the last 12 to 24 months with like kind of like the economy, what's going on there with political pressure, and then of course with AI, which is top of mind to all businesses
Right.
and small.
So I would say the mood is definitely shifting. Companies used to chase speed and scale. Now they're chasing stability and savings. But without losing the headcount, without losing the talent. That's the key. And the best leaders aren't asking, how do we cut more? They're asking, where are we overpaying for underperformance? And that's the much smarter question that organizations should be asking. I would also say that expectations are being shaped by AI and data. Leaders want to see predictive models around speed, quality, and risk. But doing more with less now includes machine-driven visibility into where is the cost control? Where is the value diverge? And a top tip for me, you don't need to spend less. You just need to stop spending wrong.
Love that. It's simplistic, but it's very, very true, right? And I
It's
think
true. It's not rocket science. This space is just not rocket science. There's a lot of people out there in the industry that sometimes make it overly complex. It's really not.
So I think that's a good segue into the next question. Lots of companies, maybe due to economic pressure, first thing they do is cut heads or try to, really put pressure on their suppliers to get the costs down. I mean, what are your thoughts in that move? Because I feel like that's just the de facto, that's a standard, right?
Yeah.
Economic conditions get tight. Oh, let's cut heads and squeeze our suppliers. But are there any risks associated with that type of approach and mindset?
So organizations do that because it's easy, it's visible, and it can often feel like progress. But the problem with that is it's like a sugar high. Rate cuts and layoffs deliver optics, yes, but not necessarily outcomes that the business is looking to achieve. So what you tend to see, or what you tend to get, disengaged suppliers, lower quality candidates, and much longer fill times. And it really is performative cost control. It's nothing more than that. I once worked with a large financial services client not too long ago, where their procurement team was hammering bill rates for the longest time. They were proud of the savings, actually, until we showed them that contractor attrition had doubled, the time to fill had jumped by 15 days, and the savings are actually costing them more in lost productivity and rehiring fees. So people need to think about, it's not just about carving out and cutting down. You can still achieve the goal that you want to achieve. You just need to know how to do it.
I think it's super interesting. And one of the things that I wrote down was lower quality candidates. And to your point, I feel like that's an unexpected outcome oftentimes that companies when lowering prices and hammering their suppliers. Ultimately, everybody needs to make margin, and you are going to get poor candidates. But then to your point, attrition and turnover is going to shoot through the roof as a result. Super interesting.
Absolutely.
And I think a good segue is the old VMS, right? Where I see like that's often leveraged by companies. They bring in a third party essentially that then manages the contingent labor force. I'd love to hear your thoughts about a VMS because to me, that's kind of the output oftentimes is that, yeah, you do save money, but then your visibility of the candidates, the candidate flow, and everything decreases. But I'd love to hear you kind of spout off for a minute in regards to the VMS.
So whenever I speak to clients, I always tell them that the first step is visibility, right? You can't manage, you can't control, you can't govern what you can't see. So you need to have visibility into all aspects of contingent labor. And a VMS system, vendor management system, is essentially, it helps you to do that, right? So you have all your suppliers in there, you have all your worker data in there. Obviously, there's no PII because that's sensitive, but you have all your suppliers, your hiring managers, your rate cards are baked into it. And it's really, from the hiring manager perspective, it's like an order management system. So you open the requisition, your MSP team or your in-house team distribute that to the suppliers. Suppliers will then source candidates based on that requisition criteria, and the interview process, the onboarding process, that can also be included in the VMS. Essentially, it's a technology box that gives you visibility over your suppliers, your contingent workers, and your hiring managers.
Yes, and oftentimes they're used as a means to control costs, right?
Correct.
Which, of
Yep.
course, have again negative consequences if not managed properly. So, super interesting.
Absolutely.
So, we've talked a little bit about costs. Cost optimization is something I would love to like to cover a little bit in regards to contingent labor. And how can companies really do that beyond just layoffs and rate cuts?
So there's typically three buckets of things that get missed. The first one is role rationalization. So companies should simplify their job catalog or their role catalog. It's very, very common that you see organizations that have 140, 150, even more roles in their job library doing maybe 25 things. So, managers and people along the way have morphed a job description into something different. So these things can accumulate over time, and it's just a natural thing. So that's one thing. Keep control over your job library. Second bucket, I would say, is supplier segmentation. Not all suppliers, not all vendors are created equal. So why treat them in an equal way? We often talk about vendor neutrality, which is fine. You can have vendor neutrality. It can come in different ways, but you've got to leverage your strength, and not all vendors are created equal. So that's my second one. The third one, I would say, lifestyle metrics. Cost isn't just in the rate. It's also in the time to fill, assignment completion, the attrition, the churn. How often do you have to train people? So those would be the three buckets that I would say often get missed.
Interesting. So job library, supplier segmentation, and then lifestyle metrics. And there seems to be a theme kind of with you as well, that it ties back to visibility and metrics, which I think is fantastic, using that as a way to kind of lead the charge, versus, again, to your earlier comment about not just hiring blindly. So that's pretty interesting commonality. So then, within organizations, particularly large businesses, but small as well, how can your procurement team, your HR team, and the business leaders work together and more strategically, in regards to like cost saving initiatives on the contingent labor force?
So, absolutely. I remember working with a global pharma client where supplier tiers were based on volume, not value. And we flipped the model, rewarding suppliers for time to fill, for retention, candidate quality. Not only did the costs drop by over 27% in year one, but the top suppliers were re-energized because they were finally getting a seat at the strategy table. And a key framework that I talk about are the three C's of optimization. So cost, compatibility, consistency. Those are the three: cost, compatibility, and consistency. And if your program lacks one of those, the others will typically suffer. And if we look into the future, expect more companies to use agentic AI to audit job category inflation, as we've already touched on, identify unnecessary SOWs, and detect pattern-based vendor overbilling. These aren't just pipe dreams, right? They're already happening in leading programs. But to answer the question about the HR, the procurement team, start by creating a shared success scorecard. Too often, procurement is chasing savings. HR is chasing quality of the worker. The business is chasing speed, and they all end up tripping over each other. And smart programs align KPIs cross-functionally so that everyone is rowing in the same direction.
That's excellent. I also, wrote down reward consistency, and I feel like that doesn't happen as often as it should. And it also
Absolutely.
energizes the vendors themselves, right? So if time is short, if attrition is low, then absolutely they're doing a good job. And in my opinion, they should do that. But it's interesting how if you do reward for that, the quality will probably just continue to increase, because they
Correct.
know better, they get to know the hiring managers better. And they also have a vested interest for quality candidates. So I think that's really, really interesting.
Absolutely. At the end of the day, recruiters or recruitment companies, they are like most businesses, they're for-profit businesses. So if you have a client that is just continually applying thumbscrews to squeeze the bill rate, squeeze the bill rate, eventually, and what we've seen are that some recruiters essentially hold their recruitment company to ransom, right? They won't work on requisitions because they can't get decent bonus out of it. So, there's got to be a give, there's got to be a flex. And one way to do that, one way to help those recruitment companies, there's lots of ways, but you can give them exclusivity, you can have a tiered system, but you really have to treat your suppliers as partners rather than suppliers. Because when the third-party recruitment companies feel like they're a true partner, they're going to work harder for you. But if you're solely interested in the number after the dollar sign and shaving a few dollars off the bill rate, it's just a race to the bottom every time.
100%. I've actually experienced that myself. I've had a business, you know, I'm still in business, but you know, we've been in business for 8 years. We do fractional work
Right.
placement. And, you know, definitely myself and my team want to work with companies that value us as a partner. Of
For
course,
sure.
you know, be flexible on pricing, but there are also some intangibles that we require in that relationship. And it is a two-way street, not one. So I appreciate we got an advocate for the recruiting industry right here. All right, the last question, Kieran, I appreciate the time. We'll get you out of here. So if a company wanted to reduce spend without hurting outcomes or relationships, where would be a good place to start?
Always start with visibility, not just spend, but look into what's driving the spend. I'd always recommend a diagnostic that looks into four high-level things. Number one, where are your or who are your top spending departments? Number two, long-term contractors who've overstayed, because those can be a risk, right? In different ways, and they can also be more expensive. The third one would be roles with most vendor variation, because you can consolidate, you can optimize. There's different levers that you can pull there. And the fourth one would be assignments with high early termination rates, because if workers are getting terminated consistently because maybe projects were lost or whatever it might be, or it's just not the great fit, then that's an area that you want to look at.
Yeah, I think there's, you know, I don't know if it's a misnomer, but often companies don't seem to understand how big of a factor attrition can be, right? If you're continually
Huge.
replacing people, there's costs associated with that, but then also there's loss of progress, which is a big deal.
Absolutely.
So again, I love the metric first approach here. And do are there a lot of folks like you out there in the market that, you know, theoretically could work with companies to help them get their arms around this type of program, this type of lead, or is it generally outsourced to companies? Talk to me a little bit about the industry at just a high level.
So, yes, there are plenty of options out there on the supplier side if organizations need help. A couple of things that companies should bear in mind, though. Unfortunately, in this industry, if the client is not looking for a new MSP or RPO, and they're not looking to replace an existing MSP or existing RPO, and they don't need yet another staffing vendor, unfortunately, most organizations on the supply side will walk away from that organization. And the reason why they do that is because there's no so-called big sale that they can get. However, a lot of those companies still need help. They still need guidance. They still need to know how to run their program safely. And that's one of the reasons why I set up Contingent Compass, so that I can educate people that maybe haven't had the benefit of all the war stories that I've seen. But one of the things I would touch on is, there's a lot of people out there, including independents, including companies, clients, sorry, including suppliers, that they've never actually been in the client's shoes. They've never run a program inside. They've never had to deal with the internal politics. They've never had to create the policies. They've never owned the shop. That doesn't mean that they can't help you, but just it does factor into their experience. So it really depends on what the client is looking for. Choose wisely, right? If you want someone or your help with something that the individual has owned and sat in your seat, you really need to choose people who have sat in your seat. So just be careful of what you're looking for and choose wisely in terms of the support that you get.
Excellent. Well, Kieran, thanks so much for joining. Really appreciate it. How can people learn more about you and Contingent Compass?
So I have a website, contingentcompass.co. Just go to the website, or you can reach out to me at kieran@contingentcompass.com. Very happy to help educate, very happy to be used as a sounding board. So, yeah, reach out.
Excellent. Well, hey, thanks again. Really appreciate your time. Sincerely.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.